Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope, there we go. No match for a little... Ah, dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape and a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah! On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.
This looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. Bonds home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Runners will be off for the crack of the bat with two outs. Kimbrel deals. Bregman in the air. Left field. Benintendi dives. And he makes the catch. Oh, what a play. Game saver. Andrew Benintendi. The Red Sox win on a spectacular catch by Benintendi in left field. Wow. What a game. What a finish.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. In all seriousness, here's what we're going to do. I'll ask my producer, Jimmy Stewart, our producer here, to open up the phone lines right away. 617-779-0985 on the Baseball Reporters after that absolutely epic Red Sox win last night against the Houston Astros at Minute Maid Park. Game four of the American League Championship Series. Boston now one win away from the World Series. We're going to, again, open up the phone lines right away. I'm going to spend a lot of time on that game. But I also think it's part of my job to look ahead and get you ready for the next one, which is game five tonight. David Price on the mound against Justin Verlander in Houston. The Red Sox have a chance to wrap it up and clinch their first World Series berth in 5 years. I mean, boy, that doesn't carry the weight that it used to. Used to say the Red Sox have a chance to go to the World Series for the first time since X. Now, their fourth trip, potentially, in 15 years. 15 years, four trips to the World Series for a franchise that couldn't win one for a century. And so I want to touch on anything and everything in this game, really. So much ground to cover that, frankly, an hour isn't enough time to do it. First, the Baseball Reporters Playoff Edition, presented by Budweiser, our friends at Bud. Boston, this Bud's for you, so our thanks to them. Here's where I want to begin, okay? And it's always a tricky line for someone like me because, again, my job is to sort of examine every and any issue with this Red Sox team over the course of the year. And this year, there weren't that many. The team won 108 games. That bullpen has been hanging over their head for the majority of the season. And yet, here they are now against the reigning world champions who won 103 games again this year, just one win away from the World Series. So let me say this with regard to last night's game and with regard to the Red Sox in the big picture. You, as a Red Sox fan, you in your car driving home tonight, you have a right to feel good about this team and as good about as you felt about them in a long, long time. You have every right. This Red Sox team, we can say definitively, is different than those of 2016 and 17. We can say that definitively. The series isn't over yet, and I'm a little worried about the state of the pitching staff. Okay, but I don't want to dwell on that, at least at the beginning of the show, the first part of the show. You have a right to feel good about your baseball team. That catch, that win, this club can win in a lot of different ways. And here's the part that, to me, you should really emphasize today. You know what won you that game last night? Field defense, and not just Benintendi's play. I mean, go right through them. Okay, I'm going to start in the seventh inning. Remember that old expression, the tournament at the Masters doesn't start until the 10th tee on Sunday when you get to the final? Playoff games, to me, don't start till the top of the seventh. So let's go there. Okay, seventh inning, the Red Sox clinging to a small lead. The Astros have a man on first with two outs. Marwin Gonzalez is on first base. Carlos Correa hits a double down the right field line. Mookie Betts sprints into the corner, gets the ball, wheels, fires it back to the infield, and I think it was, who the hell was at second base last night, Murray? Was that Holt?
At that time?
I think it was Holt, right?
Yeah.
So I think it was Brock Holt in the game at that stage. The ball comes in. It wasn't a strong throw by Betts, but the whole point was the release was quick. Okay, so Betts retrieving the ball in the corner and getting it back to the infield quickly prevented a run from scoring. Sort of an overlooked play there. It felt like a small thing, but his athleticism, getting there quickly, and then if you were to watch the replay, watch how quickly he grabs it and throws. He doesn't set himself. He just grabs it, spins, and throws. Gonzalez had to stop at third. Barnes came in, got the strikeout, saved the Red Sox a run. In the eighth inning, Tony Kemp hits the ball into the corner and foolishly tries to stretch to a double. Again, Betts not only sprints for the ball, but in one motion grabs it, wheels, and fires a strike to Bogarts, who puts a tag on Kemp, one out in the inning. Craig Kimbrell almost had a nervous breakdown on that play. He was so excited. Absolutely saved you another run. That's two. And in the ninth, the play you just heard, Benintendi's catch, saved you two or three runs. So that's four or five runs just in the last three innings of the game that the Red Sox outfield defense saved the pitching staff, saved Alex Cora. And we haven't even gotten to the interference call in the first inning. We haven't even touched on that yet. And Mookie Betts' abilities in right field, those were a huge factor in that play. So a two-run home run gets wiped off the board. If you add that one to the list, and you should, Red Sox outfield defense last night saved them 4-7 runs in a game that they won 8-6. Okay, so we talk all year about the lineup, the bullpen, the pitching staff, the rotation, and the reality is that the Red Sox can come at you in a lot of different ways. And this was evident in the series against the Yankees in August. The base running, the athleticism, the power, the speed, they can win in a lot of different ways. And right now, one win away from the World Series, you have every right to feel good about your baseball team. Every single right. So here's what we're going to do over the course of the hour. We'll get to the interference play. I mean, your calls can go anywhere they want. We'll get to the interference play a little bit later on in the show. I'll give you my thoughts on that. There was a big picture takeaway for me in this game regarding Red Sox pitching and pitching overall in the postseason. And then we'll get to David Price in Game 5 as well. We will do all of that for you here over the next little bit, take it right up until 7 o'clock. And it looks like we're going to get at least another week of the baseball reporters. Not cemented yet. Because, again, I don't love where the pitching is. But they're in great, great shape. Dante's in Worcester. Dante, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, Matt? I love the show. I called up trying to get on with Felder, but I totally agree that the length of these games is crazy. I work construction where I wake up at 5 a.m., and I love baseball. I'm in my 30s, and it's tough for me, man. You know,
okay, Dante, in all honesty, yeah, I don't want to dwell on the length of the games. We all know they're long, and you know, so we're not going to spend a ton of time on that part of it tonight. You want to talk about last night's game, we can absolutely talk about last night's game or tonight's game. I just don't want to bitch about the baseball because it's been a long time since the Red Sox won some meaningful games, some really meaningful games. They're winning them now. The last thing I'm going to bitch about is that it takes 4 hours. Chuck is, or longer. Chuck's in a car. Chuck, go ahead.
Hey, Maz, two things. How shocked or surprised were you on the amount of mistakes that Houston made in that game last night, a critical game? And then secondly, we speculated what the heck was Cora going to do with this bullpen, and how surprised were you to think that he would go with this many starters, and now last night he almost went with Price in the ninth inning, and we'll see that if they make it to the World Series.
So, Chuck, look, I'm not surprised about the starters. I think we sort of thought all that could happen. I was a little surprised, that we saw Price get up in that game last night, given that he was basically going to pitch tonight. So they were able to sidestep that one and avoid it. The biggest surprise about the bullpen is that you found a couple of guys who can get your big outs. Brazier and Barnes. Brazier last night went 1 2/3. And Barnes came in to help him out because Brazier had run out of gas by then and threw only five pitches. Five. Now, I thought Barnes should have gone back out for the eighth. But maybe tonight Barnes is the guy that goes two and Brazier gets one. Maybe that's what the plan is. Matt's in Methuen. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Tony. Good to talk to you and Jim. Tony, you know, I gotta admit, I fell asleep last night. I didn't get.
Yeah, I don't blame you. You don't have to be ashamed of that. Go ahead.
They were tied. I'm like, you know what? I can go to bed with a clear conscience for the time. We'll see what happens. I woke up, and I saw Benintendi's catch in the end, and I wanted to ask you about it. Do you recall that scene in Major League where the coach, you know, Hayes makes the catch. He goes, great catch, Hayes. Don't ever F do it again.
I don't remember that scene, Dan, but your point is that did he take an unnecessary gamble?
So I wanted to talk to you about that. I wanted to talk to you about, should he have gambled right then and there? I know it's a tough question right then and there. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on the play at Kimbrel. And he just
So Matt, I'll tell you, let's keep it one thing at a time just because I want to get to as many people as possible. It's the kind of game that a lot of people want to talk about, and I don't blame you. So here's what I'll say on Benintendi. Was it a risk? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And so, now Murray said earlier, and Murray, correct me if I'm wrong, if I put words in your mouth, but you had said earlier you want him making that play. And
I do.
If the ball goes by him, you can live with it.
I do. And that, a lot of that has to do with how Kimbrel had been going there, because I felt like it was, you know, he was going to blow it regardless. So I want Andrew Benintendi to sack up and try to make a play like that, even if it got past him and they end up blowing that game.
Okay. And what I will tell you is that if Benintendi misses that ball, we are all over him. And so, to me, it's
realistically, sure, yeah. But I'm glad that he took that risk, and I believe me, I understand the repercussions if he does miss it.
So, to me, it's really this simple. When you say, did he do the right thing or did he not? Play like that really comes down to one thing. If you're going to try it, you better make it. To me, it's like stealing third base. If you're going to try it, you better make it. If, particularly in a spot where it could like end an inning or something like that. And so, in the case of Benintendi, listen, give him all the credit in the world. Give him all the credit in the world. It was a good catch. And before you say great catch, let me clarify. I've seen better catches. Okay, that's not the greatest catch I've ever seen. But under the circumstances, and a lot of times when a guy dives, he doesn't have to. He dresses it up. Benintendi last night had to dive to catch that ball. You got to keep that off the grass, obviously. So you can't let that ball touch the grass. He had to go down there to get it. The game was on the line. It was a great play. I don't know if it was a great catch or it was a great play, if there's a difference there. And so I would say if you're going to gamble there, you better make the play. And he did. And I also think that this to me, maybe is the biggest takeaway from last night's game. You want to talk about a distinction between the Red Sox of 2016 and 2017 versus the Red Sox of 2018. The old Red Sox, the John Farrell Red Sox, looked like they didn't want to lose. The 2018 Red Sox with Cora look like they want to win. And I know that's a cliche, but they play aggressive. They play confidently. They do all those things. I do think a lot of that spins off the manager.
Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Altuve. Right field, back there, bats at the track, he leaps, and it is out! It's off a fan, no, they're saying off of bats, it is in play, they may be calling it interference. Joe West made a couple of calls.
Mookie with the jump, he had it measured, it looked like he was going to catch it, and he gets stopped from catching it from the hand of the fan. The fan closed his glove.
And out is the call, wow.
See, now, I don't want to fight with you all tonight. I don't. Because the fact is we're going to disagree on what the right call was on this play. So here's where I'm going to meet you in the middle. And here's what I would tell you. That if you are a Red Sox loyalist and you say that that was absolutely positively interference, I'm going to say that you're just blinded by your loyalty to the team. Because I don't think it was that clear. And if I tell you that I think the play was a home run and that Mookie Betts was up in the crowd, you're going to tell me that I hate the Red Sox and I love the Yankees like you always do. And the fact is, neither one of those things is true, but that's how you're going to feel. Okay, so here's what I'm going to tell you. It was unclear. It was unclear. Mookie Betts extended up into the crowd. Fans were clearly on the edge of the wall and interfered with him. There's no doubt that they interfered with him. Their hand hit his glove and his glove closed. You could see that pretty clearly. And so would Mookie Betts have caught the ball if there were no fans there? Yes. But when you jump up into the crowd, there are going to be fans there. And so they did a good job explaining the rules and everything last night on television. So here's what I will tell you. You caught a break. And I said this last night on television on NBC Sports Boston, the postgame show, which we'll be doing again tonight immediately after the game. You caught a break. And the break was that Joe West, the umpire, called it interference. Had he called it a home run, the call wouldn't have been reversed either. Because I think ultimately Major League Baseball, basically, and they told you this during the broadcast, basically decided the play was inconclusive. So the Red Sox caught a break there, good for them. And they took advantage of it. right? They won the game. Now, that said, the Astros, and I give A.J. Hinch, the manager, credit for this, the Astros did not lose the game because of that call. Jim Murray said this earlier in the day. The Astros actually got the lead later in the game. They went ahead 5-4. So they can't look it back on that and say, well, that screwed us. You have no idea what happens if they call that a home run. The whole inning changes. Okay, so the whole thing changes. But the fact of the matter is that it didn't cost them the game. And even the manager said that. A.J. Hinch said that, which I give him credit for.
You got to, because they led that game after that happened. And it's their bullpen that blew it. You know, he was so credit to him there. That was the right thing to say.
So we'll get to Astros and go over their mistakes in this game. Believe me, because if I were doing radio in Houston today, the one thing I would tell you is that if the Astros fans are lamenting that cost them the game, boy, what a loser's lament.
Your pitching staff's given up 16 runs in the last two games, home games.
And the mistake,
that's what they should be mad about.
And the mistakes that the Astros made in that game last night, wait till I go over them. You forget them all in a game like that. Frank is in New Jersey. Go ahead, Frank, quickly.
Mass, I wanted to make the point on Kimbrel coming in for six outs. That was a terrible decision, but let me make a point about Price. Price warming up in the eighth and ninth inning. Cora had no confidence in bringing him in. I don't blame him for that, but yet he's warming him up in the eighth and the ninth. So looking ahead to tonight, I think him warming him up with really no intent to bring him in is going to have an effect on the way Price pitches tonight. And I just don't feel comfortable, as you said earlier in the day, I don't feel comfortable throwing any games away or treating any games lightly. So I think him warming him up last night is going to have an impact on Price tonight.
So, Frank, it might. I mean, again, pitching sale and relief in game four of that Yankee series, in retrospect, seemed to have some impact on him. So I don't rule that out. To me, the mistake that Cora made last night was pulling Barnes from the game as quickly as he did. Barnes threw five pitches in the seventh. Five. He got one out. He didn't come out for the eighth. Barnes could have given you more. You spread out the workload a little bit, and now instead what happened is, you know, Brazier went 1 2/3, Kimbrel went 2. Now those guys might not be the same tonight. Danny's in Revere. Danny, quickly, I'm going to ask everyone to go fast so we can get to as many people as possible.
Hey, guys. So a few months back, you guys talked about fake wins when they were playing weak teams. Then you guys also talked about a fake cycle by Holt a couple of weeks back, which I totally agree with. I wanted to ask, how many fake saves does Kimbrel have? And how many times has he been saved by his defense?
Danny, great question. Murray was last night a fake save.
No. Look, I mean, you could maybe make a case for it because he was imploding in front of our very eyes. But no, he did ultimately close it down thanks to Andrew Benintendi. So no, there's no asterisk on it. Okay, I don't really see any asterisk on this team going forward at this point.
Kimbrel scares the hell out of me.
How can he not?
Scares the hell out of me. So look, honestly, I think the guy's cracking right there on the mound. And I think that when Benintendi made that out at the start of the eighth, I'm not Benintendi, Betts, when he went into the corner, fielded the Kemp ball and threw him out at second base, look at Kimbrel's reaction.
Oh, it shows you that he knows his ass just got saved. I mean, to come into that game and immediately give up a hit like that, I thought that guy was right to try to go to second, to try to stretch it out, get the runner in scoring position. You and Mike were all over me in the afternoon showing you want to do it again, go right ahead. But I think that's more credit to Betts for making that ridiculous play. Kimbrel, his reaction, he knows his ass got saved there.
He's having a nervous breakdown on the mound.
It's been like that for weeks, man.
Yeah, he's having a nervous breakdown on the mound. Christian is in Norwell. Go ahead, Christian.
Hey, Anthony. I just want to know if you're nervous at all about Moreland playing at first base. I know the reason why we're probably bringing him in is because he's fantastic against Verlander. But, you know, with these third basemen throwing these wild pitches to first base, are you going to be nervous at all?
So, Christian, look, it's an interesting point. There is a lineup decision, and Mitch Moreland is in there at first base. I was going to get to this a little bit later, but since you brought it up, Pierce is out of the lineup. Moreland has had a hamstring issue. Maybe he's better. I don't know. I mean, Moreland's a better defensive first baseman than Pierce. Okay, so let's see what he looks like. Maybe he's moving better. But Moreland's in there. Kinsler is in there at second base, so your defense on the right side is a lot better. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Now, Moreland's numbers, we'll give you those a little bit later in the show against Verlander, quite good. The Astros also made a starting lineup change. So Mariznick is in there in center field, another righty bat against Price. So maybe the Astros are trying to bring that left field into play. His matchup numbers with Price aren't great, but those are the real significant changes in this game tonight. Am I worried about Moreland? No. If the mobility's a factor, you put Pierce in. So the fact that Moreland is in there tells me they must have some level of confidence that he can now manage it. Because Pierce isn't a great first baseman. I know he's made plays, and everybody likes that. And listen, I like it too. I'm just telling you that Moreland's a better defensive first baseman than Pierce. Now, will the injury affect him? You might be right. You might be right, but I'm not worried about Moreland being in the lineup. When we come back, I want to talk about the pitching, the Astros' mistakes, because there is a big picture takeaway about the pitching in the postseason in general and in last night's game. It really struck me. We'll do that after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There's the first pitch swing and a base hit by Kemp. And he's thinking about two and he's on his way. That's his throw to second. The tag. Oh. He is out at second. What a throw. And what a mistake by Tony Kemp. Cannot get thrown out to start an inning down three.
It's Brian Anderson, play-by-play man for TBS, who I picked on in this postseason. The guy bugs me for some reason.
He never shuts up, Tony.
He does. He talks incessantly. It drives me bananas. But on that call, he nailed it. And so, look, we've had these discussions all the time here on 98.5. We have them on the afternoon show on Felger and Mazz. We have them on the Baseball Reporters. When the Patriots came back against the Falcons in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, we all asked the question, did the Patriots win it or did the Falcons lose it? And the right answer is both. Both. The Falcons made mistakes that opened the door, and the Patriots then took advantage of it. So it's both. And I would tell you, in this case, both. So Tony Kemp, stupid play. What a stupid play. And Mookie Betts took advantage of it. What a great play. So give Betts a credit. Here's a good one for you, because I was talking to someone in baseball about this today. I'll just tell you that it was someone who works for another organization that is in the American League that plays against the Red Sox. Okay? I mean, everybody in the American League plays against the Red Sox. And this person told me that last year in a game at their ballpark, Mookie Betts was out there at 2:30 in the afternoon. You know what he was doing? Somebody was hitting balls into the right field corner, and Betts would run in there, grab it, spin, and throw to second. That he practiced over and over the very play he made last night. So it sounds like a Bill Belichick football story, but that Betts would run in, grab it, spin, throw to work on the accuracy and throw to second base. Last night, he nailed it. He nailed it. Now, he has the ability, but I don't think it's one of those things you just show up and do. He actually practiced that specific play. Mark is a Natick, but Mark, go ahead.
Hey, Tony. I want to talk about the bullpen, but I want to go to Mookie Betts first. I agree with your take on the interference, but I think Joe West makes that call the way he does because of Betts' reputation and exactly what you were just talking about in terms of how he practices his defense.
Yeah, so Mark, look, listen, I'm going to leave everybody to one point because I just want to get to a lot of callers, but I actually said the same thing earlier today on the afternoon show. To me, Mookie's defensive ability absolutely factored into the call. West saw that he was in position to make the play, and had it been J.D. Martinez, I'm not sure they get the call. My buddy Angelo's in Methuen. Angelo, I thought you were going to call me last night, pal.
Well, listen, Tony, I'll make it short. I'm disgusted. And it's ludicrous. Bradley is coming up with the big, clutch hit. You know that. And he's getting zilch. No one brings it up. Only when he hits a bump on the road, then they bury the poor bastard.
So, Angelo, look, if you want to gloat about Jackie Bradley, now's the time to do it. He has three hits in the series. Three. A three-run double, a grand slam, and a two-run homer. Nine RBI. If it ended right now, he's the LCS. But we all know it's not over yet. Okay, so again, I have concerns about the Red Sox pitching, and I want to detail some of the pitching for you here in just a minute. Quickly, Pearson and Quincy, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing I think that's getting overshadowed for obvious reasons, because he's hit absolutely clutch bombs, but like last night, Jackie Bradley's at-bats were very good, especially for him. Like, he was forcing the count deep. He forced a walk. He getting hit by a pitch, there's not really much he had to do with that. I was just getting hit by a pitch. But, like, if you go back and look at his at-bats, he was making the pitcher work. He forced himself, I think, at least one walk, and then the home run. Like, at the plate, he's doing phenomenal right now.
Yeah, Pearson, look, his OPS in the postseason is, like, almost 1,000. Now, again, he's hitting .208, and you look at it and go, well, wow, all of his hits have just been big. That's why. But the other thing is he has drawn walks, 6 walks. I think that's tops on the team. So compared to other years, The at-bats are better quality. He's getting on base if he's not getting hits. He's not striking out as much. If Jackie Bradley produces offensively at a reasonable level, no one ever said superstar status, he's worth it. We all agree on that. It's just about the offense. So quickly, I want to touch on a couple things fast before we get to your calls. One is the Astros' mistakes in these games. Hit by pitches, walks, wild pitches. They threw three of them last night. Constant, and Carlos Correa failing to touch second base on a double play. I'm not sure I've ever seen it quite like that last night. Hinch called it a needle in a haystack, meaning that it wasn't that big a deal in the game. I think he's out of his mind. It cost him a run. And Hinch said, A.J. Hinch, the manager of the Astros, Hinch said, well, he just missed the bag by a matter of inches. A matter of inches? He missed it by a mile. And that on that play, a matter of inches is a mile. Huge. And as for all the walks and wild pitches, brings me to this, because, look, I'm a little bit of a baseball nerd, and the style of play right now for both teams, not just Houston, bugs the crap out of me. So I looked this up today. Do you know that in last night's game, okay, which took forever, but that's an aside, there were a combined 344 pitches thrown. Almost half of them were curveballs and sliders. And the reason I mention that is because typically when a hitter gets up in the count 2-0, 3-1, 2-1, those counts used to be called cripple counts because the pitcher was at a disadvantage, all of a sudden had to come in with a fastball. Now they don't throw fastballs anymore. So they throw curves. And you know what happens? Walks, hit batters, Lance McCullers, and wild pitches and pass balls. So as much as you say, well, we're not going to throw fastballs anymore because they get hit out of the park, you know what the Astros did instead? No, they walk you, they hit you, they threw wild pitches. Either way, their pitching's not executing. So the bottom line for me is this. Years ago in the postseason, and I'll use an example for you that applies to this playoff year. TBS is doing pregame shows with Pedro Martinez and Gary Sheffield, okay? Years ago in the postseason, you know how it worked? Pedro Martinez would get on the mound against Gary Sheffield, and he would say, my strength is better than your strength. I know you're a great fastball hitter, but I'm a great fastball pitcher. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to challenge you that my best is better than your best. I'm going to come right at you because my strength is better than your strength. You know what they do now? They go in with all these scouting reports, and a guy like Rick Porcello goes on the mound and he says, you know what, my curveball's really not all that good. It's okay, but you can't hit a curve. So I'm willing to bet that your weakness sucks worse than mine. And that's what it's become. It's passive. They all back into it. Nope, I'm not going to throw you a fastball because you'll hit the fastball, and I'm not going to pitch to your strength. I'm going to pitch to your weakness, even if it exposes mine. Oh, God, they pitch like wuss bags. Wuss bags, the Astros. Last night, and the Red Sox, too, by the way. Kimbrel last night, 35 pitches, 18 curveballs. Rick Porcello threw 38 curveballs and sliders last night out of his 68 pitches. It used to be that fastballs were 60% of all pitches thrown. Now, you're lucky if you get 50. They pitch like chickens. They're afraid. Nobody wants to get hit. So you know what they do now? We'll walk you instead. Then we'll throw a wild pitch and get you to third and you get a two-out single. You're going to score anyway, but it takes longer. Oh, God, I hate it.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.